He wrote a great deal, as I mentioned a moment ago. Let's be a bit reckless, even, and just mention three of his books, and then just mention a little bit about each of these three books, any one of which could easily be the subject for a course of lectures almost as long as the one we're embarked on now. Augustine's Confessions chronicled his own conversion. They stand as maybe the first true work of introspection, in European literature. They are much more personal than Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, which I mentioned on an earlier day. Here, Augustine bears his soul, bears his quest for God, in a quite remarkable way, and in a language that is elegant, polished, refined, beautiful, moving. His book on Christian doctrine was the first systematic exposition of how Christianity related to classical learning. He basically took the position that in order to read the great Christian text, you're going to have to learn your Latin, perhaps your Greek as well. Augustine actually didn't have very good Greek. But you're going to have to learn your Latin. You're going to have to learn all the tricks of the rhetorical arts. You better know some history. You better know lots of other things as well. But then Augustine said, what we will do is spoil the Egyptians. We'll learn all of these things, this metaphor being taken from the Hebrews leaving Egypt before the Exodus. They would take with them only what they could use for the journey. So you would pass through pagan antiquity and take only what you need, as it were, for the Christian journey. But nonetheless, you would take it. You wouldn't leave it beside. You would take with you at least what you could use. His City of God was a magnificent theology of history. Now, it was occasioned by the Gothic sack of Rome in 410, which was something that had been profoundly distressing to large numbers of people. But Augustine does something rather interesting here. He says, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Rome doesn't matter very much. Now, remember again those lines from Virgil. I place for them no end in space or time. They will rule forever. Nothing was more deeply embedded in the Roman psyche that the world would last as long as Rome lasted. Now, Augustine says, well, you know, now Rome really just isn't all that important. We just don't really need to worry about Rome all that much, because all of human history, from the creation of humankind until the last judgment, is marching to a final salvation of the world, a final regeneration of the human race. He used the images of the city of God and the city of man. The city of man, the world of sinners, the world of ordinary people. The city of God, the world of the redeemed. Gradually, the world of the redeemed would absolve all sinners. You'll notice here that history is now linear. We have again and again and again stressed the ancient view that history is cyclical, that it repeats itself. For Augustine, history marches in a direction to ultimate redemption. The last of the Latin fathers was Pope Gregory I. Now, Gregory I, we met him, remember, running the city of Rome after the absence of a Roman government. Gregory wrote biblical commentaries. He wrote letters. He wrote Lives of Saints. And he wrote a remarkable book called The Pastoral Rule, which was not unlike Cicero's book on duties, a manual of how to be a bishop. What kind of a person you ought to be a bishop, and what you ought to do if you're a bishop. This book was profoundly influential for a very long time. Now, in the Eastern Mediterranean, there were fathers, too. We'll speak of them a bit more briefly, but not to disdain them, rather only to signal that we have a much larger and more complex phenomenon here to talk about, were we able to do so. The so-called Cappadocian fathers, Basil the Great, 330 to 379, his brother Gregory of Nyssa, 330 to 395, and Gregory Nazianzus, 329 to 389, were formidable biblical scholars, were formidable spiritual writers, but they are perhaps most important to us because they laid down many of the fundamental definitions in the great Trinitarian and Christological battles, God is three in one, God is man and God, that we talked about a little bit in this lecture and also in the preceding one. Their slightly younger contemporary, John Chrysostom, John Golden-throated, 347 to 407, was Patriarch of Constantinople. He was a preacher of enormous skill and power. Here was a man, again, who knew his rhetorical arts. Here was a person who wrote at great length on how the Christian may live the moral life while still functioning in the world. But here also was a man brave enough to take on the imperial court. He criticized them bitterly for their immorality and for setting a bad example. He earned himself a couple of periods of exile as a result of this. But the point is that he was taking the position that no one should be exempt from criticism, not even the imperial court.